My name is Denise McGow. I am 65 years old. The date is April 20th, 2022. I'm in the StoryCorps virtual recording booth calling from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, and I'm here with Mike, who is my one small step partner.
My name is Mike Lombardi, also from Oklahoma City, 70 years old. Today is April 20th, and Denise is my partner. I'm looking forward to this.
I would love to hear from each of you. What made you want to come to the interview today?
I guess we could continue to be gentlemen, ladies first. Well, you want me to go, I can go. Either way.
I've been hearing the different stories on NPR, and I was impressed with kind of the mission of trying to connect with the basic humanity of each other and with people that we disagree with. And it's been such a difficult time now. As Mike said in his bio, I completely agree with the lack of respect and civility and just inability to even discuss things that people have a different opinion on. So I was interested in learning more for myself so that I could be a better person in discussing things and learn not to take things personally when people have a different opinion. And then another thing, the faith leaders in my church, they kind of have a saying, when you don't agree with someone, or you have a problem with what they're saying, don't get angry. Don't take it personally. Get curious and find out about the other person, because, you know, we all come to the table with so many different experiences that have shaped who we are. And I firmly believe we have more in common than things that we disagree on. And with Mike, I can see we share a love of family and also a love of travel. And that really shapes who you are. So I'm looking forward to talking about that.
Yeah, I agree totally. You know, being 70 years old and, you know, born and raised in New York, you know, we grew up in my grandparents' house, you know, lived there, you know, till, you know, we never moved. I mean, my dad was the last, wasn't the last, but there were seven kids in the family. And the routine was, it was an Italian family. So when the children would get married, they'd move upstairs to this, you know, second floor, and they'd live there 6 months, whatever, move out, next kid get married, you know. Well, we stayed. So we stayed, took care of my grandparents, you know. And, you know, my thing is, you know, we had nothing, but we had everything. You know, we had nothing. We never went on vacation. We went out to eat as kids one time. I mean, my whole life, you know, till I got on my own, we went out to eat one time for pizza. And, you know, I tell my children, I mean, they're, of course, adults now, but I said, you know, my dad left a tip. He had one time with pizza. He left money on the table. Well, I didn't know what it was. So I took it back to the car. I said, oh, you left this on the table. And then he explained that it was a tip. Was like, well, you know, how would I know? so we grew up, you know, we had everything we needed. But, you know, TVs, all that. No, we had nothing. You know, but it was fine. Everything was great. And today it's just, I'm so tired of, you know, what you said before, the way that the country is going, this total lack of complete, you know, and especially this disrespect for America. I mean, mm-hmm. that's just... You know, you're coming from a military background, mm-hmm. so it just irks me. I mean, we lived in Holland for 4 years, and we were over there during the Gulf War, and, you know, the Dutch people, of course, that was only 30, 40 years after World War II. They loved you because you were American. You know, mm-hmm. it didn't matter, you know? And, you know, you don't today, you know, this, you know, the whole thing about, like you said, disrespecting, and then, you know, they think everything's bad. You know, America's bad, everything's bad, you know? You know, we know that, you know, history has issues. But if you look at the world today, I mean, find a country that's not going through, mm-hmm. you know, chaos. You know, and yet those people seem to respect their countries, but we don't have it here.
Yeah, absolutely. Mike, thanks for sharing some of your background and how that informs your perspective and, you know, specifically your frustration around people having some kind of anti-American sentiment. Denise, maybe if you'd like to speak about your background and maybe how that informs your worldview.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, my husband has had just, he's recently going to retire this month after 40 years in public service. He was an Air Force officer and pilot for 23 years. So we traveled a lot, and I was in Holland also, Mike, and I know what you mean about that. They loved Americans, and it felt really good to be there. They hadn't forgotten, you know, what had gone on. And my husband was an active participant in Desert Storm. So, you know, all that's very fresh in my mind. And I think what, you know, our military experience shaped me a lot, because I grew up in Nebraska. And like you, Mike, I had four sisters. We went out to dinner one time at a Diamond Jim's buffet when I was growing up. So I never imagined I would have the opportunity to travel as much as I have. And so that's really had a big impact on who I've become. And I've really so enjoyed getting to know other cultures and other people. And I think two things. I think America is a great place. And I always think, you know, we fight within America with each other about sometimes the silliest things, and we have so much more in common. And I think go to another country and see how great we have it here. You know, those exactly, of you that have never, and sometimes it's people that have never been anywhere that have the strongest opinions, you know? So I think that on the one hand, it's a great place. And then I also think on the other hand, we're having problems, and it's just part of the landscape now. And like in a family, we need to face what's going on. And if we can just get together a little bit and think of some common solutions. And Mike, you're my age, so you remember what it was like years ago when politicians would say, "My friend across the aisle," and they would have a respectful discussion and actually work together bipartisan on issues. And they didn't agree with things. Sometimes they agreed hardly on anything, but they would get together for one issue and problem solve to benefit everyone. And I just wish we could get back to those days.
I think, were you in Susteberg?
We were in Germany. We were stationed in Kirchgoins, and we were just there for a year. And so we traveled as much as we could. So when we went to Holland, it was just a little side trip vacation.
Because I was civilian, but my office was actually surrounded by the Dutch Air Force base in Soesterberg, which the American Air Force shared with. So we actually, my kids went to the Department of Defense school. Even though we were civilians, they could go to school there. So, you know, it was a great experience. God, I shouldn't have said that, because now I lost my train of thought. You talked about the politicians, and, you know, since I was in business for a long time, and I, you know, remember in lots of meetings, you know, you'd go in and, you know, there'd be people from different divisions, and they say, you know, do not sit with Susie. You know, don't sit with your coworkers. Go sit. Mm-hmm. And yet I think, you know, if there was a business person that took over as president, I hate when I hear the other side, because there is no other side. You know, there's no other side of the aisle. It's America. It's USA. Mm-hmm. It's all of us. There's no aisle. And if you, if they would have the, you know what, that comes in, okay, when you go into Congress and Senate, you are not, there is no aisle. I mean, you know, rip the seats out, change the whole configuration. You know, I don't care what you do, but make it so you are not, you know, McConnell, you are not going to sit with, you know, your little buddies. It ain't going to happen. Mm-hmm. Same thing for the, you know, the Democrats. You know, I think, you know, stop using the other side. There is no other side. Mm-hmm. You know, there's only one side. Like, we have different opinions and maybe some different feelings, but I still think in the big picture, you know, we're very, very, I think, you know, everything is in the middle, and, you know, yeah, then you branch out from there. Mm-hmm. But it's very tiring, because there's nobody, I can't think of one politician that you could say, wow, my grandchild, you know, watch that lady or gentleman, you know, those people are awesome. You know, I mean, there's a few that I like, but they're not in power anymore.
And I think too, you know, of course, we're at the age where we're worried about what are we leaving to our children. And we want to leave, you know, there's so many things to be concerned about these days, politically, with the climate, with infrastructure, all sorts of things, not to mention COVID. You know, we've been through a lot the last few years, and we need each other more than ever. And after going through COVID, you would think we would all be very aware of how interconnected we are, right, and how we depend on each other. And so I think we've seen kind of the best of each other through COVID, and then also the worst of each other through COVID. I've worked as a nurse for most of my career and an educator. And so, and then a strong part of my faith too is concern for other people. And that troubles me greatly that we don't seem to be able to have concern for others, you know, like with this may be slightly political. I don't know how you feel, Mike, but like with COVID, you know, when we were in the thick of it and wearing masks, you know, I looked at my congregation, it's a bunch of frail elderly people like me.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. We wear masks to protect each other. And within my very own congregation of people that I love, who we believe so many things in common, there were some people who would refuse to wear a mask. And I'm thinking, well, you're putting Mary Lou at risk over there, who's, you know, frail and elderly. Right. And so that's concerned me too, is just, can we not have more concern for each other?
Well, I totally agree, but it was what I don't understand. I mean, like I said, my wife and I are both registered as independents. I'm definitely a conservative, you know, from the way I grew up. And, you know, it's like, you know, when I read today, they want to let go of student debt. You know, that irritates me, you know, because wait a minute, you took the debt out. You know, if you want to do something, extend it, but you know, it's like you took the loan, you knew what you were doing. You know, then why should we give it away free? And I remember seeing the one gentleman, you know, got a hold of Elizabeth Warren and said, well, wait a minute, I paid all my bills. So am I going to get my, oh no. So wait a minute. And I think that's part of the problem. They're sending, you know, I believe that a lot of these politicians, they only do things for the, you know, just to get votes. They could care less about us people. It's just, let me prolong my job as long as I can, because it makes me feel good. You know, even though I'm conservative, I voted for our liberal mayor, you know, Maria Clark. And like I said, the mask, everything. Okay, well, she made us wear. Okay, do you think she woke up and said, let me see how I can irritate 90,000 people in Norman? No, she's trying to save lives. I mean, whether it's, yes. I don't care who it was, they're trying, you know, you don't like Michigan, they're trying to save lives. They don't have it all. You know, I don't believe for one second that these people had any ulterior motives. That, you know, if they're wrong, okay, they're wrong. But, you know, they're going with the best thing they know, you know. And yeah, I mean, we wore the mask. If you tell me to wear it, I'll wear it. I mean, you know, do I want to wear it? No, I hate it. But if, like you said, to protect the other people, you know. And, you know, I got a neighbor across the street. And, you know, if I told him I voted for Bria Clark, he, like, wouldn't talk to me anymore. You know, because he's, like, 80 years old. You know, more on the, you know, he's, you know, I think I'm in the middle. And, you know, everybody's got to have a say here. You got to do things for everybody. Like with Oklahoma, I mean, I'm not a fan of abortion. I don't, you know, it's not that I believe in it or don't believe it. I'm not a fan of abortion. But you can't say no abortions or you're going to jail in Oklahoma. That is the dumbest. I mean, I don't know. I just shake my head. You know, how do you say that? You know, so if a doctor gets caught in Oklahoma, you're going back. So now we're going to start bombing. I mean, what are we going to do? You know, it's, it's like immigration. I mean, I believe in immigration, but you can't have open borders. You can't have this, what's going on. And yet you can't sit down and talk to anybody because they just, it's either one or the other.
I agree with you completely about that too. Immigration's been a problem for decades now, and we need to come up with some kind of solutions. And my grandparents and maybe yours too, my husband's Italian, and his grandmother came from Sicily, and my grandparents were Germans from Russia, and they immigrated here. They left a brutal regime and immigrated to the United States, wound up in Nebraska, faced a lot of discrimination, and slowly built a life here. And so I have a real heart for immigrants, and that's part of my volunteer work now, is working with immigrants. And I've been so impressed with the woman I'm working with now is from the Sudan, and she's come to Oklahoma. She is doing her best to get a job as soon as possible. She's so grateful to be here. She's what we want in the United States, you know, is hardworking people that are, you know, just trying to grab a chance. and you look at immigration, and we need to come together to come up with solutions. Because of course, you're right, we can't just have open borders with anybody and everybody, but there needs to be some humanity in there too, and some respect, and just, you know, giving people a chance. And it just seems like we just go back and forth. And I feel like our representatives a lot of times are not representing us. I think lots of us are kind of in the middle there, and we're willing to listen to solutions on either side. But what you said before too, a lot of them politicians seem to be just concerned with keeping their job. They'll do whichever way the wind blows to get votes and keep their job. And that's just so disheartening. So that's kind of where we are in America today, it seems.
Yeah. And I don't understand how people, you know, even Oklahoma, and we've been here we moved every 4 years till we got to Oklahoma. So we've been here for 23 years now. And, you know, I get amazed, and I've said this to like lots of friends, that, you know, Oklahoma City should be a model, you know, for the federal government, because, you know, on it, look, the best and the brightest don't say, hey, let's go to Oklahoma City. And we love, you know, we love living here. It's a beautiful place. It's a great place to raise a family. But, you know, this is not a place that draws, you know, the smartest people in the world. You know, we have very low economy. And yet you look at what Oklahoma City's done downtown with the penny. Cole may not know what it was, but they put a tax in for an extra penny like 10, 15 years ago. One penny on the sales tax. If you looked at the downtown today versus what it was 20 years ago, you'd be like amazed. And they didn't do it on our taxes. They did it apparently on this 1%, or they got some, you know, donors that are giving them, you know, a bunch of money. But it's beautiful. And yet, and then, you know, to take on that, and the last mayor, Mick Cornett, which when, you know, we were at on a cruise when all that was going on, he didn't even make the primaries. And I thought, how could you not vote for this guy again? This guy was, it's hard for me. I don't even remember if he was Republican or Democrat, because it didn't really matter. You know, but I don't like the current governor. I think he's just right back where, and, you know, he just, when he starts talking, I was like, you know,
I agree with you, Mike.
I just think, like, you've been hanging around Donald too much. I mean, because, you know, your word means nothing. I mean, all you do is yap, you know, and, you know, and then you see the thing in the newspaper about these millions of dollars being given to a little local barbecue guy because he's running all the barbecue places, state parks. And it's like, okay, this is not difficult to figure out what's going on here. You know, or what did go on there.
Yeah.
So Denise, circling back to, you know, something that you shared earlier, I know you mentioned, you know, both you and Mike connected over, you know, believing that America is fundamentally a great place to be, but that there are problems internally. And you two both spoke about immigration. What are some of those other problems that you see as needing to be addressed?
Well, like I said earlier, I completely agree with Mike about the lack of civility and the way our politicians, rude, crude, vile, and vulgar behavior. And you think your children are hearing this, your children are hearing what are supposed to be the adults in the room talking to each other this way. And it's not even that you disagree. It's that they're horrible people and they have horrible intent, you know, instead of just a disagreement about how we should go about things. I think we mostly want the same outcome. We just disagree on how to get there. And I sure don't know the answers to everything, but I think we need to change bring the temperature in the room down and just talk with each other with some more respect, because I think it's just kind of filtering out to all levels of society, even, you know, drivers that just will, you know, all the rage driving and everything that happens, or people that get upset because they have to wait in line too long for the cashier, or just all kinds of rude behavior. And I think it's filtering down from it's people, the government, you know, the way that we've been talking with each other. So that's one of the big concerns to me. And then just how are we going to leave things for our children? We need to figure out a better healthcare system. It's broken. I'm concerned about climate change and, you know, doing what we can to, so we don't go down the path we're currently on. And as a person that's traveled a lot, I mean, I've seen in real time glaciers melting and, you know, things going on the planet that I'm very concerned about. And I just, it seems like, you know, it seems overwhelming about what, where to begin, but we can do something. I mean, why can't we just agree on one little thing to get started? I mean, I would have thought infrastructure would be something we could agree on. Who wants bridges falling down on somebody? Or like Mike, you alluded to maps, you know, what a great thing that was for Oklahoma City for a little bit of tax. Yeah, I'm perfectly willing to donate, you know, tax me for things like that. And we've built this beautiful downtown area that compared to what it was 25 years ago is completely different. And that's what, to me, that's what the role of government is. We can do more together when we, you know, have a common purpose than any of us can do alone. And so I think there is a role for government when, you know, working together for things.
Mike, do you think that you share a similar or a different perspective about important issues in the U.S. right now or roles of government?
You know, I actually don't. I mean, just when Denise is talking, you know, I sense a very strong empathy. It's all like, you know, it's easy to get upset about this stuff. I'm not upset that we can't talk, not upset at each other, upset that this is so ridiculous. This is not difficult. You know, immigration, you know, the big immigration is very difficult, but it's not difficult to start fixing it. Okay, we're going to allow 10,000 people a year, 100,000. Let's pick a number and that's it. You know, and, you know, I think, which I haven't, I guess, how do I say this? You know, I voted for Trump the first time, you know, not knowing he was going to be what, you know, but it didn't take long to say, okay, now again, was it a mistake? You know, is he any worse than Biden? Or, you know, those were all tough, but he's obviously a horrible human being, as you said. He's one of the, maybe the top worst people you've ever come across. But I think what I see, you know, this whole, which I haven't seen anybody, I guess I was disappointed. I didn't vote for Obama. I didn't like a lot of what he stood for the most part, but I thought he had an opportunity to, you know, being a black person, and okay, you got elected. So, okay, we could talk about race all day long and how bad it was. We all know slavery's horrible. I mean, I didn't know about the thing in Tulsa. You know, I didn't even actually, which most Oklahoma, we didn't, which is sad. We don't know about these race riots that occurred and what these, and I guess thing is, okay, it wasn't white people. It was people that happened to be white. You know, it's not white people. It's just, these people did these horrible things. I don't think anybody could disagree that, well, that was okay. You know, that these were bad things. You know, those people were very, very misguided. Say what you want. You know, they were very misguided. But I thought Obama, you know, had an opportunity to bring people together. And I don't think he did. I think the victim card came out loud and strong. And, you know, like in Oklahoma Pie, I heard this, we have a T.W. Shannon. I don't know very much about him, but he's running for Senate or something. He's, you know, I don't know, 35, 45, you know, black guy. He talks more like a Republican. He is a Republican, I guess. you know, but they're the only ones you hear them. Don't play the victim card. You know, if you, and that's my whole opinion about, you know, social justice. And okay, if you're the victim, it's over. If all you're going to do is, if you're waiting, you know, when you get up, if you're waiting for someone to come tell you how to straighten your life up, forget it. You're done. You know, you can't be the victim, no matter how bad the circumstances are, no matter whether you're black, you know, Asian, it doesn't matter. You know, yes, there have been hardships. Yes, there are things that were wrong. But if you make yourself the victim, you know, if you're waiting for the federal government to help you out, forget it. You know, you're not going to get what you want. I think that's what that's one of the biggest problems I see, is that we're letting people, you know, the government, you know, and Obama had a chance to say, hey, you know, I'm president, you know. So, yes, we've come a long way, and now, you know, a black gentleman is president. And I think he did the other stuff around. You know, I could be Trayvon Martin. It's like, okay, you know, I understand that, but, you know, you didn't do anything, you know, and there's nobody else doing anything to bring the country together anyway. But, I mean, I thought he had, because he's an intelligent, I like him. I mean, I like him as a person. you know, I think he's a good guy. You know, he'd be a good neighbor. You know, whereas, you know, if you look at Trump's like, I don't even want you on the same planet, you know, much less living in the same country that I live in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we're at a, as far as race relations, it's been very dismaying because a lot of these issues I thought were settled issues, and then they're raising, you know, here we are again, with George Floyd and, you know, these horrible things that happen that no one can possibly want. And then in Oklahoma, when I first moved here, I had never heard about the massacre, the race massacre in Tulsa. And at the time, they called it race riot, which has a different connotation than massacre. Riot sounded like as though the black people were, you know, there was some disturbance when really it was a coordinated massacre. Right. And the more you learn about it, and then you see it was a prosperous, you know, the Black Wall Street, they were prosperous black population there, wiped out in a coordinated attack in one day. It was just a horrible thing. And then you look at all of the generational wealth that did not happen because they lost everything in that one day. And I look at my parents and like my immigrant grandparents and then my parents, and I have benefited from my hardworking immigrant parents. And like you said, Mike, they didn't expect anything from anybody. They just went out and started working. And they were able to give my parents a better life, who then were able to give me a little bit of a cushion and help me get educated. And we have helped each other up that way. And I look at what happened in Tulsa and that whole generational ladder or generational wealth building was wiped out from those people. So what to do about it? I don't know. I don't know what the answer is there. You know, they talk about reparations and that sort of thing, and it gets very sticky very quickly. Even Obama wasn't sure what the answer was there. So I appreciate it, and it makes me look at the systemic racism as a real thing, you know. And as a white woman of generally privilege, I am realizing just how much I don't know. And that's another part of why I wanted to do this interview too, was I'm just realizing here I am 65 years old, and some things I know have more clarity about, and some things I realize I just don't know because it wasn't my experience. I have a friend who is African American, and seeing firsthand some of the prejudice that has happened against her, that, you know, I really didn't know that was something that she dealt with on a regular basis. Because how could I? You know, it just wasn't my experience. And being in the military, that was one thing. Maybe in some ways, again, I was kind of sheltered. But what I saw was it, like with my husband's coworkers, it was a very leveling place. I mean, it was, you definitely went on merit, you know. So it was a great place to be a little bit insulated from racism. From my perspective, I know there was things happening that I didn't know about, but so it's a difficult thing. And it's a discouraging thing. And another thing that I worry about for our children, you know, to, I just hope we can move past this as a nation.
One of my pet peeves, my wife and I disagree on it totally. On the privilege, you know, privileged white, especially, okay, mm-hmm. privileged white guy, you know. Mm-hmm. And when I hear that, it's just like, you know, it just, and I remember my mom, who was not educated, you know, but, you know, she always said, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. And to me, that's the exam. Okay. It's like, okay, I'm privileged. My dad made $15,000 a year. You know, I went to St. Mary's, blah, blah, blah school. You know, then I went to, you know, a Jesuit high school that cost, I think, $500 a year, which is probably a lot for my parents because I can't relate to it, you know. And then I went to, you know, Queensborough Community College for 2 years and then Brooklyn College. And then, you know, that was the Vietnam days. And I decided I didn't want to go to school anymore. And I got a job working in an eyeglass laboratory, which turned out to be my career, you know, just because I wasn't happy. I wasn't satisfied. You know, someone said, privileged white guy. like I said, we never went on. And again, I know, do I have more than other people? Absolutely. So I think when I think about it, I think I hate that saying. And I think when people do that, they just, you turn, you know, I think I'm fairly open and I will listen. But I think if people change how they say, okay, if you said, who's got the most advantageous position in America? Okay, white males. Of course, you can't argue with that. But don't tell me I'm privileged. I mean, I was born, this is how I was born. I'm not privileged. I was born this way. You know, I mean, Donald Trump was born into $1 million. I was born into nothing. You know, so anything I have, you know, I earned. You know, my wife and I, we worked hard. You took care of the kids. I did this, whatever. So I think, you know, people have to start, because it is, it just, you know, there are some people that won't listen. You know, so if you turn them off immediately, I think that's what my mom said. Man, you know, it's like, okay, you know, it was like a little bit of honey, what have all those old wives sayings, you know. And but I think you can't get through it because people just want, they want to, the talking points, you know. And my wife hates, you know, up till probably 3 or 4 years ago, I like Bill O'Reilly. He's his own, you know, he's not Donald Trump. He's a strong conservative. And, you know, when I exercise in the morning, I turn on CNN. That's what I watch. And I enjoy it. I mean, I know who they are. I know what they're doing. You know, occasionally I switch to Fox News just to see what kind of crap is coming out of them because it's horrible. I mean, so I couldn't even, you can't even turn it on because those people, they're horrible. They're just, you know, they're off the deep end. I mean, Ingram and Hannity, and they're just like, what are you talking about? You know, where do you get this stuff? But I do listen to Bill O'Reilly's podcast. You know, I probably disagree at least half of what he says. But it's just, and I read, you know, the Wall Street Journal. So I think I get a good, and I love NPR. I absolutely love, you know, love NPR. You know, it's on in the morning. It's on, you know, in the evening. I'm not, you know, working anymore, so I can't do that. But I love NPR. So I think I get a pretty, you know, well-rounded view. And my views based on what I see. But I think you and I mean, I haven't heard you say one thing that says, well, we're different. I don't think we're different at all. I think we're both in the middle. And you may... You know, you probably have more empathy than I have for the social justice stuff because, you know, but okay, that's, it is what it is. So what, you know, that's not, I think we're saying the same things, you know, yes, people, you know, there was something on, I love CBS Sunday Morning. It's probably the only TV show that talks about good stuff for 90 minutes. And they had, it's a sad story, you know, 20-year-old, they were 20, she's 65 today, her and her husband, a relative said, hey, can you come watch, you know, baby Susie for tonight? You know, they go, you know, they had to take the 4-year-old to a hospital. Long story short, the kid was abused, you know, raped. Okay. Well, they got blamed for it. You know, he died in jail. You know, they finally got exonerated. Well, okay, but he died in jail and she spent 20 years in jail and they didn't do anything. You know, they went to watch a neighbor, you know, to watch their sister's kid or something. And because the boyfriend, you know, disgusting, was abusing a 3 or 4-year-old, you know, these people got blamed for it. Now, yeah, did they get blamed? Because, I mean, it was total black family. So was it racial? I don't know. I think it's just ignorant and stupid. But regardless, when you hear that kind of stuff, you just, like the Tulsa stuff, you just, how could you, you know, there's a lot of things I don't like, but, but how, I just, you know, that's like with Trump. I just don't understand. I mean, okay, so I voted him for the first time. Okay, but now you see what he's, and it's not what he's done, even if he did great things. And inflation was great, but he's despicable. I mean, every word that comes out of his mouth is just, it's against every, and you know, I can't understand how people, anybody looks at him and says, okay, but I don't like Joe Biden. Okay, well, I don't like Biden either, but, you know, how could you say, and I'm afraid he's going to get elected again. You know, I'm afraid there's enough.
I'm hoping we have some young people like Cole that can be stepping up. You know, we need some young people with ideas, and that does give me some hope for the future. You know, when I see young people doing things and with new ideas, and sometimes I feel like people like Trump or Biden, you know, God love him, what a difficult job, what a mess he walked into and what a difficult job he has. But he is old and, you know, he's doing the best he can, but I'm looking forward to some young people. We need to pass the baton to some young people with great ideas.
Well, yeah, when they talk about, I mean, to me, it's not, you know, and here, oh, business, you know, we, after I lost my job, we bought a business in Oklahoma City. So we own a graphic shop. We don't own it for 17 years. I've been out for at least 5 or 6 years. You know, my two of my children and my son-in-law run the business. I'm going to lose my train of thought again. God, that's bad. This was getting old. Now I lost my complete. I lost it. It'll come back.
It'll come back.
Your turn. Until I come back. Oh, you, maybe the young people. It's like, you know, yes, we've got to get some new blood and people that just, mm-hmm. you know, are a little bit more open to other things. And, you know, the transgender, it's really hard. I mean, we've got a 11-year-old granddaughter who, you know, last spring she decided, you know, I'm not comfortable as a girl. Well, yeah, you know, it's extremely hard for me because, like, I, you know, it goes back to the privileged white guys. Like, you know, life is, if you just, you know, people don't want you to say normal anymore, but if you just do, you know, the thing that's in the middle, you know, you do what most people do, life is going to be difficult. If you start going out, you know, and stretching outside that boundaries, I'm not saying you can't do it. It just, life becomes harder. You know, mm-hmm. it's more of a challenge if you start operating on those fringes. And that's mm-hmm. what I was trying to explain to my 11-year-old granddaughter. You know, it's like, okay, I'm not saying we love you no matter what, but, you know, you're 11 years old. What does this even mean? So you're going to cut your hair because you don't, what? You don't feel comfortable? And again, it's hard for me to understand because I don't, like I said, how can I understand mm-hmm. what it is growing up black? I didn't grow up black. So I don't understand what's going through your head. But mm-hmm. my wife's sister, transgender, you know, and it's, you know, her life is a mess, you know, mm-hmm. partly because of the personality of the person, you know, because the victim, again, it's a victim. Oh, I, you know, they won't let me on a plane. They won't let you on a plane? Really? I mean, yeah, okay, I know it's hard, but what do you, you know, whether you chose this or whether this is nature, I don't know. But again, you have to try to find ways to solve it, not to sit here kind of say, oh, I'm being persecuted. You know, because if you keep mm-hmm. saying I'm being persecuted, you know, you're self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, everybody's against me. Well, guess what? They are now because you keep telling them they are.
Yeah, I think we, it's really difficult. And the last thing we want is life to be any more difficult for our children or grandchildren than it already is. And then, like you said, if you're something outside of the normal, we love them no matter what. We just don't want to have another problem in their, or what could be perceived as a problem in their life. And
right, I think
that's one thing I've seen in my lifetime is so much greater acceptance for people. Like I'm thinking of, you know, gay people, what it was 20 years ago compared to what it is now. And I think, well, what was the change? And I think it, as more people came out, of course, gay people were always there, but they were just hiding it. And now, you know, they're our friends or coworkers or people in our congregation. Once you know someone, then that's what changes everything. You know, then people are much more accepting. And yes. I think once we can get to that place, life is hard enough. Let's just let, you know, people be who they are. And just, well,
you said the individual, how you said it, but I always, you know, on that CBS Sunday morning, there was, you know, when they talk about the race stuff, there was a story about, I guess there are two brothers, football players playing for Seattle. One of them was born with no hand or something. But, you know, he's like a 270-pound, you know, playing in the NFL. And mm-hmm. the story on CBS Sunday morning was this, you know, blonde-haired, blue-eyed American couple in Seattle, you know, they wanted to meet whatever this guy's name was. And they didn't care that it was black or yellow or whatever mm-hmm. it was, because they had a 3-year-old, you know, little white kid that was born with the same thing. And, you mm-hmm. know, so here they are, you know, they're hugging each other. And, you know, and it was like, okay, why are you not telling that story? You know, why are you not telling the story? You know, because it's got nothing, you know, yes, there are some people that are prejudiced, but, you know, I think most people could care less whether you're black, white, yellow. It does. If you're a nice person and you're nice to me, yeah. I'm going to be nice to you.
Especially when you get to know them. Yeah.
Yes.
When you, like you said, the common humanity of they shared that condition. And once we can just get to know each other, it changes everything, I think.
Yeah. I listened, you know, because I'm trying to get a little bit more educated. So on NPR, they had a on the TED, you know, they had to do their TED talk thing, and they had mentioned, you know, on the NPR show, oh, we're going to talk about some, you know, sexual whatever or something, on, you know, so I went to the NPR and found it and listened to it the other day, and, you know, started out with some, yeah, I guess she's 40 years old now, but she was born, and I, XYY, XXY, I'm not really sure. So she's a girl, but she's got testicles or something. But, you know, she was an outcast as a child, you know, and you listen to this, like you said, you listen to her talk and you're like, okay, your heart can't help it. You shouldn't have to live like, you know, she's fine. But she was like, I'm not a girl, I'm not a boy. What'd she call it? Intersex, which I never heard that term before. Mm-hmm. I didn't know the term. But I think most people won't be. I mean, I actually told a guy across the street about something I heard on NPR or something. And I said, you need to go listen to this. And, you know, because it wasn't, you know what I mean? He wasn't going to listen to it because it was on CNN. I can't listen to CNN. Well, okay, but if you only read what you think, you know. And I think I was, you know, I don't know, maybe because how I grew up, but I love the sayings I learned when I was working. Well, I read them in a book or somebody told me, and I heard one that said, I don't like people that agree with me all the time, because even I don't agree with me all the time. You know, and yet so many people are like, you know, oh, I got to tell you what, I know what I think. Please do not tell me what you think. If I ask you, what do you think about this project for work? Don't tell me what you think I want to hear. I know what, you know, that's not who I am. You know, got me in trouble a lot of times, you know, not all the time, but, you know, because most bosses, you know, hey, you know, they want you to spit back what they want. I was never like that. So, you know, but I don't know how, like I said, I think this is great, but what can we do? Mm-hmm.
Well, we started. We're talking.
Right, but we would have talked anyway. That's the, you know, we would have talked anyway. If we ran into each other in the social circle, I don't think we would have had an issue talking. I don't think anyone saying that I can't talk to her. That's not right. You wear yellow shoes. Like, no, it's not good for me. I do wear yellow shoes. No, yellow sneakers.
So one question that I have is, you know, what do you think is your earliest memory of politics? Like, when did that kind of like teaching or learning begin in your lives? And, you know, you don't have to answer my question, but that's just a conversation start.
Mike, you want to go first?
Probably the first time it was when Kennedy was shot. You know, that's probably the first time. I mean, you know, I was a baby, but, and then I probably never thought about it again. And, you know, I don't know, you know, and probably after, you know, the Waco stuff and the Oklahoma City bombing, and probably as I got a little bit older, you know, I mean, I worked in corporate for, you know, 40 years and, you know, it's politics. Well, you know, when you just, I always thought, you know what, I trust the people that are working for me a heck of a lot more, and they're a lot nicer than the people that I work for, because the people that are working for me, they're just good people, you know, working hard, you know, but the people above are just like the politics. They only do things for what's in their best interest, you know. I mean, not all of them, but I think more than the majority, they only operate. Did we lose Denise?
I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
I think she's still here.
Yeah, okay. I'm here.
Oh. Yeah. You know, but I think they operate on their own. And, you know, so I think, you know, once the stuff happened, and then when I went overseas and saw how, you know, how people over there, especially in Holland, they loved America. And I, you know, I don't know that I've been, you know, I love America, but, you know, you become more patriotic after 9/11 and those kind of things, because, you know, and I think Denise said, when you live overseas and you see, you know, you actually experience other countries and see, you know, look what's going on in Russia. You know, we're just going to cut the news off. You're not going to get any news. You know, you get what I tell you, you know, and if you protest, you're going to jail. And actually, you may just die. Going to jail might be the good thing for you. You know, I mean, do people not realize, you know, understand, you know, when I saw those things like North Korea, you know, oh, the North Koreans are upset because Kim Jong Jerky is out of the country. They're all in tears. I mean, who believes the story? You know, oh yeah, they're all in tears because he's gone. Yeah, right. Yeah.
I think for me, when I first, like Mike, I remember everyone our age, you know, you can answer that question, where were you when Kennedy was shot? You know, I was very young, but I that's one of my early memories. And I think the next time I really didn't pay that much attention, and I was just a kid, you know, a teenager in kind of my own world. But when I started working as a nurse in my early 20s and doing home health, where you develop really close relationships with people. And that's when I really felt like our government, we need to be doing a little more for these elderly patients that, you know, are my age now that I would be seeing, who were doing absolutely everything they could to take care of themselves and their families. And they just needed a little bit of help, you know, or we would pay for. For instance, I would be seeing a vulnerable bedbound patient, and I could not get anything to prevent a bed sore for that person. But once they had a bed sore, which then will cost multitudes more money, then we could, then Medicare would pay for it. And that was very formative to me, as far as, again, a role that our leaders and our government can play in making life better for people. And of all the people that I saw, I never saw one person trying to game the system. They would reuse their syringes. They would do everything they could to stretch things, you know. Now, some of the big companies, sure, there was some fraud and abuse there, but as far as the patients that I worked with. So that was formative to me as far as you know, a role for government and starting to pay attention to politics, I guess, to answer your question.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the medical part. I mean, just that it already, you know, that's one of the things, you know, we lived in Canada also for a couple of years, and, you know, we lived in Holland for four, so we lived obviously on the Dutch medical system. And, you know, when they talk about, you know, call, I don't care whether it's single payer, or I don't really care. But, you know, to say, you know, here, you got to worry about it. You know, you got to worry, you know, my wife and I can afford it. We're still paying, I mean, $13,000, $14,000 out of pocket, you know, for Medicare, you know, because we were, you know, well off and blah, blah, blah. So we still pay a bunch of money. But, you know, what if you couldn't afford it? What if you needed something and you, oh, you can't have this drug, but you can have that. You know, it's just, and it's all corruption. I don't, you know, I think just like the Oklahoma City thing with this barbecue guy. I mean, this doesn't take a lot to figure out. You're okay. Somebody's corrupt. You're not paying the Swadley's barbecue $18 million for running a damn little, you know, you know, this is not difficult. You know, what's somebody was on the bribe, you know?
Yeah.
Not hard to, you know, and I don't know how difficult is fair. Who it's just, I don't know. I mean, I don't know, which is what's frustrating is what do we do? How do you, you know, this is great. I love doing this, you know, I love listening to stories. I think, but, you know, most people won't even do what we're doing here. They don't want to be bothered. They're apathetic. It's just, it's too much trouble. I don't, you know, I don't want anybody to think whatever, you know, like my guy, of course, he's a great guy, great neighbor, but you know, how do you get through? Man, Steve, come on, you know, just cause you know, somebody believes in social justice doesn't mean they're a jackass. You know, that's not what that means. It just means they have a slightly different, and I think it is slightly different opinion. I don't think it's vastly different. I think it's just slightly different. I don't know. I mean, I don't, you know, I hate to say this, but I almost think like you need another revolution because I don't know how else you're going to do it. I mean, term limits, pretty simple to figure out. You know, when you look at, you know, McConnell, Pelosi, Schumer, and whoever, which is even worse, McCarthy, is that, you know, the other guy in the Republican? I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, it's hard to say, you know, if I ran over them by accident, I might not back up just to make sure I didn't. I mean, because they're just, I mean, you know, I despise Pelosi. I despise McCarthy. I despise McConnell. You know, Schumer's probably the least of the four, only because he's not, doesn't say very much. You know, he's not as vocal about it, but, you know, how can anybody look at any of those people and say, oh, Nancy's great. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd have you know, I think she's part of the problem. Look where she lives and how much money she makes and what is she yapping about? You know, you're the, you know, look at San Francisco. This is where you live.
Well,
you know.
It seems like at some point too, you should get out of the way to make, you should be mentoring young people and then get out of the way so that they can then take over.
Right. But I think, yeah, like you said, in business, you know, I worked with people that, you know, managers have thought, if I'm going on a vacation and things go really bad, that's good because my job's protected. And it's really hard to explain to them, no, see, if you leave and things get screwed up, you're not doing a good, but I mean, to me, it's so easy and so intuitive. And yet people, that's not how they think. They think, hey, if things are bad when I'm gone, that means they really need me. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it's so simple for me to see the other side of it. I think that's what's going on in government. Just I don't know who the young leaders are. I mean, it's not Ilhan Omar. I mean, I actually like Buttigieg. I thought he was, you know, but then I see what's going on with like JetBlue. It's like, what are you doing about these airlines? What are you, and maybe he's doing stuff and he's not talking about it. I don't really know, but I thought he was.
He has potential.
You have some potential here, but if you're just going to, I think they're all afraid to say what they really think because they're going to lose votes. If they say what I really think, then I lose votes. So I won't do it.
Well, folks, unfortunately, we're at 51 minutes. We need to end our call soon. But I just wanted to, give you an opportunity for any kind of closing thoughts or anything you want to say to each other before I stop recording.
Well, I really enjoyed this. It was great talking with you, Mike. And one thing I learned, I've learned a lot of things, but one of them, like when you said white privilege is like a trigger word for you. And so that's good to know, because sometimes, you know, the words we use don't really convey what we want to say. So I really take that in, that I could say it in another way that might not just cause a knee-jerk reaction to somebody. So I appreciate that. Because again, you know, as we talked through it, we agreed on a lot of things there. It was just that word that I used that gave you a certain connotation. So that is a good thing for me to think about. You know, the words matter and important to think about how we say things. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, I thought this was great. If somebody asked me tomorrow, hey, you did this, and was it a liberal? I think the words, it's, hey, oh, she's liberal. I think most people are in the middle. I think we all have this, what you said. We all have for our family, for our kids, you want to go out and have a nice dinner, go to the play, whatever. And we might have slightly, it's like, I think it's like, is it, I hate Brussels sprouts, but I love zucchini, so am I against the Brussels sprouts people? It's like, no, I just don't like, I just don't like those, but I'll eat zucchini all day long.
Art museum, Mike, just one other thing, Cole, we're having the art festivals going on in Oklahoma City right now. And I was there last night and they had this great poster and it said, we're all different and we're all alike. And I thought that was great. You know, it's true. We're all a little bit different, but we're all alike as far as what we want for our families, what we want for ourselves, that the important things, we're all alike.
Perfect. Well, thank you both. I'm going to take just about 10 seconds for silence, and that helps kind of our recording of the track. And then once that 10 seconds is over, I'll end the recording and then just talk through a few more things.